Welcome to the InnovaBus podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't yet joined our wonderful Flywheel Nation community, go to flywheelnation.com and join in the podcast conversations. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast. Welcome to today's episode of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where I'm excited to be joined by Fred Joy, co-founder of Arcanis Adventures. Fred's groundbreaking approach to tech entrepreneurship and software development outsourcing is your bridge, spanning the turbulent waters of startup challenges and leading on to solid, safe ground. His insights into creating a nurturing work environment and innovative investment strategies offer foundations that you need to build a resilient and successful business. Join us as Fred provides the tools to construct your path to success, leaving you empowered and prepared to excel in both your professional and personal life. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited today to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast from almost the same time zone as me, from Cebu in the Philippines, Fred Joy, who's the co-founder of Arcanis Ventures, a premier Swiss software development outsourcing firm in the Philippines that specializes in building and maturing highly skilled and dedicated teams of developers for startups and established businesses. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Fred. It's a real privilege to have you here as my guest.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, Jürgen. I'm really excited.
Yeah, me too. Now, you've had a really interesting background, and we hear from your accent that it's not quite Filipino. It's not quite Aussie either.
That's right.
So we'll learn a little bit more about the background, and also I'm looking forward to talking about all things pioneering world of tech startup investments that you're involved in, and the business itself, of course. We've had 20 years of experience navigating software development and helping other companies build their own software platforms.
Yeah.
Before we dig into all those things though, Fred, what's the impact you're hoping to make in the world today?
I think the thing that motivates me is to try to improve people's lives in general through various means. So there's the Arcanis and Arcanis Ventures side of thing where we help startups. I have a small ad tech business on the side, so we're trying to improve how people experience the internet. I recently opened with my business partner from Arcanis a CrossFit gym that's really focused for our employees to improve their health, but also other members. And one thing that I'm passionate about is trying to mentor younger entrepreneurs. So those are the things that motivate me and passion me in general.
Mm-hmm. And I see you obviously don't have much time for sleeping. There's so many things on your plate that you do, but you've had a really interesting journey, and I know you started off in a corporate career. Tell us a little bit, very briefly, how you kind of transitioned from corporate into the entrepreneurship space.
Yeah, it was a bit of a chance or a happenstance. I don't know how to say that. But so yes, I've been in finance for 10 years in Switzerland. I wasn't very excited about that part, but and always wanted to leave. And I had a friend that is a born entrepreneur and that left Switzerland in his early 20s to create, I mean, his first business, first in Spain. It was in 2001, I think. And we remained friends throughout the years. And in 2008, I had decided to go on a holiday and I wanted to go back to Asia, which I loved. So I sent him a message and said, "Hey, Alan, I'm thinking of spending a week in Hong Kong. Are you, available?" And he had been asking for years if I wanted to visit. So I'm like, okay, this time I'm doing it. And so I landed in Hong Kong and we kind of spent a week together, partying. He showed me a bit around. And one morning he's like, "Hey, dude, let's go run in the mountain or whatever." And like, okay, shoes on. And then we go running. And in the middle of the run, he's like, "Hey, do you want to work with me?" And I didn't expect that. And then, of course, that was my opportunity to actually leave Switzerland, get something that I thought was a bit more exciting. And I guess entering to this entrepreneurial journey, leaving big corporates and then working with a small business. We were like 30 people at the time. And it was an e-commerce venture in online games, something I had never done before. So yeah, maybe I was a bit, so excited that I didn't ask what I would have to do. I was like, "Yes, let's do it, figure out the visa." And 3 months later, I landed in Hong Kong with my luggage. And here it is.
Didn't look back. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I didn't. No.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So it was a software development in the gaming space. And you talked about a team of 30 people. So were they all staff or were you in the outsourcing game as part of that already?
Yeah, so I was in the outsourcing game earlier because I worked in an insurance company that was migrating one of their main softwares. And I was involved in that project. Then I worked in a bank where I was also into the outsourcing space in a way. When I moved to Hong Kong, we had an e-commerce business that was like mainly we were working off an e-commerce business. We had one or two developers in India that we were working with. And about a year after I arrived in Hong Kong, we had an opportunity to buy a very small business in the Philippines that was in the gaming space as well. So we went to look at it, and we ended up buying that business. And then that's when it opened our eyes that we could offer much better service from the Philippines versus Hong Kong because of the English speaking abilities, and also much cheaper than we had in Hong Kong. And also finding our own developers in the Philippines because we're working with people in India that we were really super happy about. So like, okay, let's do it ourselves. So we migrated that business from Hong Kong to the Philippines. But that e-commerce venture didn't fare well because the game editors changed the game structure, so we couldn't do what we were doing. So at some point, Alan had sold his business for a couple hundred million dollars, but I hadn't. So I needed to work. And I'm like, we gotta pivot because otherwise I'm going back to Switzerland and I gotta find a job. And we decided we'd do software development outsourcing because while we were doing the e-commerce thing, we had other friends, entrepreneurs who were looking for developers and asking us to help them out. And so we saw that opportunity that we could do a better job at what we had experienced with India and other outsourcing destinations and offer this from the Philippines with a much better experience. And so that's kind of when we decided to create Arcanis and start, providing software developers to other companies as our main business.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so you kind of scratched your own need and then found that there was other people had the same need.
That's right. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
All right. So the evolution of software development outsources with remote and distributed teams, what so you've kind of been on both sides of that. What are some of the particular challenges that companies face today when they're working with outsourced teams, and how do you recommend they approach those challenges and address them?
Yeah, so there's many different challenges. There's the, you know, staff retention. There's the sense of belonging to the company you're working for. There's maybe some cultural differences, language issues that you can have. And so for each one of them, there's different ways to approach things. And for us, the way we try to approach these challenges that have become, I think, a bit bigger since COVID, because everyone's working from home now. So there's a lot more isolation. And if you don't have this sense of belonging, meeting people and feeling like, you know, it's kind of the real world still and not just computers and screens and stuff like that, we try to foster different ways of people meeting in real life with incentives. And for example, the CrossFit gym we built recently is also for that purpose. People get healthy, but also they come and meet their friends, even if the workout is just a pretext, if you want. But it really helps, like, people having this sense of belonging, and it has a direct effect on the attrition. And so a lot of companies are working with people only remotely. And what we found that worked really well with our clients who are mostly, you know, abroad as well, is that paying a visit to your team or having some of your team members, you know, come see you and visit you maybe once a year is an extremely big impact on the sense of belonging and understanding each other, seeing how other people live in different parts of the world, amongst other things. But we've seen that's a super powerful tool, is to actually get people on the plane and or in the car, whatever, and meet, whether it's in the Philippines for us or in Australia or in Europe for some of our other clients.
Mm-hmm. So the team that you, or the staff that you provide to your clients, plus the, I'm guessing, the staff you have yourself, are sort of all in one group. Are they all work from home? Or do you have an office there?
So before COVID, everybody was coming to the office, and COVID just made the idea that we wanted to offer a bit of remote work to everyone kind of became a reality a lot faster than we thought. And I think it's been the case for a lot of people. And but we haven't looked back. Like when we survey our employees and how they want to live, you know, their lives, and also our clients, to see whether they're happy or not about the output of people, we've seen like mostly positive changes to a remote only setup, given that people meet and connect regularly, right? Because the communication, the contact is absolutely key. And now we're slowly introducing a few more requirements for people to meet, you know, in the city at least every 2 months and things like that. So there's a little bit of going back, but not too much. And I think that's also linked to some particularities of some cities around the world with a lot of traffic, and the commute time is extremely long. And we value the quality of life of our employees so they can spend time with their families and not spending 3 hours, you know, in a bus or whatever every day, and basically losing that time for everyone. So
yeah, that's right. I was just before you said that, I was thinking, if Cebu is anything like Manila, it'd be 2 or 3 hours in both directions that some of the staff may have to commute. It's shocking, or it was pre-COVID, the traffic there.
So yeah, exactly. That's one of the main reasons why we don't want to have people back to the office, but we fly the entire team. So because now we have people across the country, we fly them in at least 2 or 3 times a year, everyone. Mm-hmm. When we have, for example, in May, we always what we call the summer party with like sports games and dinners and stuff. And so people fly in for a week. We host them, and there's a big event on a Saturday where everybody's meeting in a resort and has some fun. So we try to do this two to three times a year. And for one other item that we've done also, I think it's a perk that our employees really love, is everyone who's been with us for 5 years or more, we take them on a overseas trip once a year with their plus one, so husband or son or mother, father, whatever, whoever they want, actually. And so everybody flies to, last year was Hong Kong, and then the year before was Singapore, and has a great time with some organized activities and some, of course, free time for them to enjoy. And so this is something that everyone's looking forward to, joining the 5 year club, as we call it, and then flying somewhere for 4 or 5 days, with all expenses paid.
Sounds fascinating. So it clearly there's a culture that is more than just the work environment. And you mentioned also the CrossFit gym, which I love that idea. I remember when you spoke to me about it on our introductory call, I thought that's really brilliant to set up a CrossFit gym as a business, and that's kind of a perk for the employees as well, and as a wellness and place where they have the social interactions.
Right. So it is a business, but we were not expecting to make any money out of that. I mean, when you see people who don't work out and start to work out, you see people blossom. Like you see they gain so much self-confidence. They feel better because they're healthier in general. And that kind of goes back to my own story where I've had a pretty traumatic event during my childhood, and so I just I became really concentrated on just on myself. I kept on eating. I had very unhealthy habits, and when I came out of teenage in my late teens or early 20s, I was pretty overweight, pretty unhealthy. Then I realized like I need to do something for myself to, to grow and to feel better. So there was all the psychological effects, but also the physical side of things, and sports helped me with both. And so through that experience, I'm like, okay, now how can I help other people, whether they have like psychological problems, physical issues, whatever that could be, sports is one extremely important tool. And with that, it's the community. It's like going to work out with your friends, like people that are from different backgrounds that you wouldn't necessarily meet otherwise. And CrossFit embodies really that. It's like you go to a place, you have different people every day. Some are the same, of course. Then you create friendships, and plus you're getting healthy, you're pushing each other. It's just such a good way to get better and connect with other people.
And you said that you weren't expecting the business to generate profit and stand alone, but I think it's a really smart investment though.
I guess. I mean, it's the returns you don't count, right? That's right.
All right, now let's switch gears a little bit because I know you do a lot of investing in new startups. So people that come to you and say, "I've got a startup, I've got this idea, I'd love to get some assistance through staff, for example, but I don't necessarily have the money to pay for it." So you've got a model where you actually invest in the business by way of providing some resources. So talk to us a little bit about how you do that and what's your model and what's the return? How's that been working?
Sure. So there's we started having this idea, but we kind of always had it, but we started putting it into play maybe 7 years ago with it started with customers that we liked working with, and vice versa. And either they started, you know, they were at some point where they were raising money for a round, and we said, hey, if you guys want us to invest with you, that's how we do it, by providing people instead of cash. And they knew us already, and so some said yes. Some came to us and asked us if we could help them out because they had a bit of a cash crunch. So it kind of started like this. And COVID has accelerated things as well, because a lot of the businesses we were working with had an actual cash crunch, because some for 3 or 4 months had zero revenues. And that would have meant us, you know, getting rid of the team and firing people if we didn't find an agreement, because they can't pay, and we can't keep people, you know, for free on a project. So that's when it kind of accelerated the investment part of things, where we like, okay, we're going to push things with Arcanis Ventures. And last year we decided that we would go even faster. So to date, we have around 21 investments that we've done in the last 7 years. And every year has been a bit more. And 2024, we're expecting to do between 10 to 12 investments for 2024, and then maybe 15 to 18 in 2025. And you were asking also about the returns, and I'll come into the model in a minute. So we're a bit too early to talk about significant returns. We've got one exit out of the 21 investments we've made. We're looking at, I think, a substantial exit or acquisition, I mean, an exit in 2025 from one of our startups in which we've invested the most. And so I think this would completely validate the model. And if it goes well, give us a lot of breathing room. So we're very positive, and that's why we're accelerating things. We've refined the model over time, right? And so what we're looking at is a business that is in late seed, pre-series A kind of stage, raising $500,000 to $1 million of raise at a valuation that is between 2 and 10 million US dollars. And we come in with a ticket size from $100,000 to $500,000 worth of work. And that represents 2 to 10 developers for 12 to 18 months of service, because the investment is, you know, like spent, if you want, between two raises, basically, which is 12 to 18 months for startups in general, and hoping that either they could sustain the team after they've spent the investment, because we build teams on the long term, or in some cases we do subsequent funding. We participate in subsequent funding rounds because we really believe in the team, like, a lot. So we're ready to double down and follow them on for, you know, we have a long-term view. So it could be 10 years or whatever until they sell, I guess.
And your plan is, basically, when the business gets to the point of sale, you basically recoup the investment that you put in there, plus hopefully some.
Yes, and the other part is, sometimes when the business gets acquired, which happened in our case, they keep the team forever as well, because, you know, we're a big part of the team. Or sometimes they simply just purchase the product or the clientele. And so then the product kind of dies, and then that's when we basically wrap up the collaboration. It's either or, depending on what happens.
Yeah. It's a fascinating model. It's sort of a smart way to invest in a business. And like you say, the COVID situation, where a lot of businesses' cash flow dried up because there was a reliance on that in-person interaction, then that made things very difficult. So to be able to bridge that is quite an achievement.
Yeah, I mean, we were lucky to be in this business of remote, right? I mean, so we it didn't disrupt us, although it was super scary because if, you know, all your clients go down, you go down with them.
Like, yeah, that's right.
There's no way around it. So, yeah, we got a really solid clientele base. We're, I mean, lucky with the people we're working. So that helped us during these difficult times.
All right. Now, you mentioned earlier about mentoring young entrepreneurs. So can you share with us some experiences there where, you know, you said that that's something that fulfills you. So what an experience where you felt particularly fulfilled or inspired by the growth of a mentee? I imagine that's something that I know I always get a big buzz out of that.
Yeah. So it's quite recent, I would say, because I've been really focused on growing Arcanis Ventures and my ad tech business. So I've been really, you know, like super busy with that. But it's always something I had in the back of my mind. So I've done some mentoring through a platform called Torch. So every 6 months, they would the platform would match you with a person in a company that has some, you know, career questions or some challenges. And so I've done this for like 6 years now. So it's not, you know, like taking a business somewhere. It's really a person thing and to help them go to the next stage of their career, mostly inside corporates. So try give them ideas on strategies and things like that. But recently, simply because I also have more, I would say, means to invest, I'm also looking at finding other opportunities to, when I meet someone that I feel is less fortunate than me and shows some really nice potential, then I'm looking into how can I help them. And this kind of came also through my own experience being coached. So in the last few years, I've had a professional coach that's really helping me and the business on strategic things. So all the stuff I've learned there, I want to try to apply it to other people at a different level. And so at the moment, it's a bit of a funny one. I've met a 24-year-old entrepreneur who started his business all by himself during COVID. And now he's at 20 employees. So he's in the Philippines, in Manila. He's in the clothing manufacturing business, nothing to do with tech at all. And he's super creative, but he doesn't have any formal training in finance, in, you know, structuring businesses, in any of that stuff. And he simply has too much on his plate to handle. And so I spoke with him a few times, and then I realized, like, okay, this guy he seems to have it's very small, but it's a sound business that is growing and is growing even without advertising. And so I'm like, okay, there's no need to push. I've been in sales for so long and it's so hard. So when you have the opportunity to see a business that doesn't require a ton of effort selling and you know, then I'm like, okay, that's the business I want to help. Well, that I see an opportunity. So now what I'm doing is putting a group of my network around this guy to help him in various aspects. So there's all the accounting side of things. There's the production side of things. How do we scale the machinery? How do we scale, you know, like the factory and all that stuff? And that's where we are at now. And before that, I'm structuring the business so that it's investment ready, because now it's a sole proprietorship with super risky. We cannot value the business properly. And so I want him to be investment ready and get him to the next level.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Great opportunity for young entrepreneurs. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, if you see someone with potential, like, it's the same at CrossFit. We I'm a bit passionate about this, sorry, but when I see someone who's good at CrossFit and can't afford the membership or whatever, we just, you know, they can work for free, work out for free, and then give them some coaching and see how they do until they can stand on their own feet, and you know,
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, we could go on talking mentoring, business growth, CrossFit, and all those things for ages, but I'm just aware of the time. So I think it's a good point now to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. It's the same five questions that I ask of every guest. And the idea is you'll give us some snappy answers that'll inspire the listener to go and do something awesome today as a result. Kind of mini mentoring, if you like.
Sure. Let's try. Let's go for that. Yeah.
Okay. So what's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Sleeping. I think that's one point. And I think it's always be curious about the stuff that's, you know, being thrown at you, the challenges that you have, and be curious about them. And take time to... Something that I don't do well is unplug. And I think if you have the curiosity first and then you unplug, that's when your brain processes answers for you. So, yeah, I would say that.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of that is about balance. I guess when you do go into the CrossFit, some of that is unplugging because you're focused on something different than the business. And also, I mean, you brought up sleep there a little bit. I was almost facetious early on saying that you probably don't have time for sleep, but sleep is so important, isn't it? And I know I've been prioritizing my sleep now for probably a couple of years. Before that, I was kind of, okay, I'll go to bed later today because I want to get this finished, or I'm reading a book, so I just want to finish the book because it's really captured my attention. But these days, end of this chapter. Bedtime.
That's right. Yeah. So, 100%. Yeah.
All right. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
So I think it's pretty linked to the other one is like, you know, just go for a walk in nature, or for me, it's riding a motorbike. Like I think when your brain is unplugged, right? So CrossFit, I wouldn't say it's that unplugged because it's so demanding, but driving a motorbike or, you know, there's this saying, well, like taking a shower. And I always thought it's funny, but it's sometimes where my best ideas come from. It's in the shower. And I think one other thing is just slow down. It sounds so basic, but that's really where the magic happens.
Yeah, absolutely. I know I can empathize with the motorbike one. I'm a keen push bike rider, so I do my own exercise on that.
Excellent.
But often, and a lot of the times I'm with other people, so there's the social aspect there. But every now and then I ride on my own, and I usually end up with heaps of ideas when I'm out riding on my own in nature.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, what's a favorite resource you use most often?
You asked for improving productivity in the stuff I've read, and I've discovered a tool called Motion .ai that helps simply reorganize stuff. If you prepare things well and you estimate the time that it would take you, it doesn't need to be perfect, but I think it just helps you to be a lot more productive and schedule stuff for you. And other than that, not much. I mean, not many systems in place really. I think I don't have much else really. I'm not very organized in that sense.
Motion AI, for those people that may not be familiar with it, I did have a look at it in the early days. It's allows you to schedule, or it automates, semi-automates scheduling the free time in your calendar for the activities that you need to get done, right? So it's kind of like time blocking, but done for you.
That's right. It just frees your brain from having to make that time yourself. It's there, and you have to do these things. So you're like, oh, okay, that's what I need to do. And so it's really helpful starting at the beginning of the day, just getting your day. And so that's a really good system actually, because it does the it explains to you what you have to do, right? You can always, change things, but I don't need to rethink every day, okay, what is my day going to be like and what do I have to do? Like, it's just there.
Yeah, great. And we'll have a link to that, of course, in the show notes. Now, what's the best way to keep a client or a project on track?
So what we do in software, I think, is very very project focused, and we have to make sure that we also are on track, because it's not just the client, it's usually us also. So we put a lot of emphasis on the really clear requirements, so that things are explained to everyone. Everybody understand what's at stake and what is expected. And then around that, we have very structured processes to make sure that it's sent to the right people with the right level of information to make sure they can complete whatever's required from them in the time frame they've all discussed together, with a bit of shared accountability, of course, meaning we try to in some projects we incentivize the teams to perform together and to help each other. Through, of course, and then communication is the last one that we try to put a lot of emphasis on.
Well, communication is so important, isn't it? But I like the sort of the cross work or the compare cross cooperation between different teams to sort of help and sometimes fertilizes ideas as well, I imagine.
Yeah, exactly. It's about that. It's helping each other find solutions. You're always smarter as a group, right, than just yourself in the corner. And remote work doesn't really facilitate this, but we try to push for people to talk and mingle and not necessarily productive work. And so, for example, when we ask people to come to the gym, and some come a bit reluctantly, but after a while they love it, so they want to come back. So, it's just the first few times they're like, ah, and then after that everybody loves it. And so they come to the office. After that, we get them a meal or whatever, like, and it's not really super productive time, but they can hang out together, and that's when a lot of stuff gets realigned, ideas come through. That's also part of it, right? It's this unstructured time that we talked about in the innovation and everything, where actually innovation also can happen in projects.
All right. And finally, in the buzz round, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Be yourself. I mean, everybody's different, right? So if you're you, then people will remember as you and not trying to be anyone else. Of course, there's inspirations, obviously, but it's about being you.
Yes, I think the idea of modeling off other successful people is a really great learning tool, but people sometimes take that to mean that I have to imitate that person,
That's right.
which is, yeah, that's where you lose yourself, right?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. Well, this has been great, Fred. Thanks so much for getting us through the buzz round, and thanks for the conversation so far. Now, where
Thank
can
you, Jürgen.
people learn more about Arcanis and also about the other work you do, and maybe even reach out and say thanks for what you've shared today?
Sure. So I think the easiest way is on LinkedIn. My name is Frederick Joy, and if you Google that, and you'll—I mean, if you search in LinkedIn, you'll find me for sure.
And we'll include link in the show notes as well. All right, before we wrap up, what action would you like our listener to take out of our conversation today, Fred?
I think it's reflecting on how much time they give themselves to just slow down and think. And that's been the motto for me, because I've had a really, really tough 2023 last year. And I realized the value of slowing down, which I had never done before. And it's been really good to me. So I'm sure a lot of people could relate to that.
Yeah, taking time to kind of reflect. And I think it's important a lot, and I know I fall into this trap all the time, is you slow down and you look back, reflect on what you've done and say, okay, this didn't work out as I was expecting, and what could I have done better there? And this didn't work out and that didn't work out, and you kind of beat yourself up a little bit. I think it's important to kind of start off with what actually worked and celebrate some of that as well.
Yes, because in business or in life, like 90% of the stuff doesn't work, right? So we try and doesn't, and 10% of the things actually work, and that's the little miracles of all the experience that we have and the intelligence that we have to make things happen with the help of other people almost all the time.
Yes, that's right. All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously today, Fred. This has been a fabulous conversation. I've really enjoyed it. And all the best for the future. And please do stay in touch.
Thank you, Jorgen. It's been a real pleasure as well.
Thanks for listening. We'd love you to leave a review on this episode. It will help us to make the podcast better for you. Simply go to lovethepodcast.com/InnovaBuzz and pick your preferred platform. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/flywheel and secure your membership to the exclusive Flywheel Nation community, where you'll enjoy direct access to our incredible podcast guests, engaging meaningful conversations, and participate in connection events designed to elevate your business journey. Don't miss out. Join Flywheel Nation today. Tune in again to the next episodes of the Innova Buzz podcast, where we've got yet more fantastic guests lined up. Until next time, I'm Jorgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.